Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My first guest this hour is Mark Bowden, best known for Black Hawk Down, the book about America's worst day in the Somalia military action in the 1990s. Now, in a new Vanity Fair article, Bowden looks at perhaps the U.S. Army's worst day of the Afghanistan War, the Battle of Wanat, in July 2008, still mysterious in some ways. We'll also talk about Mark's new book on cyber warfare called Worm, the First Digital World War. Mark, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
Most people don't even know the name, the Battle of Wanat. Where is Wanat?
Wanat is in northeastern Afghanistan. It's one of the most rugged and contentious of the provinces in Afghanistan. It's at the southern edge of the Kunar province.
And what went wrong there on July 13th, 2008?
Well, American forces were in the process of sort of pulling back from two even more remote outposts, and they had moved a platoon of soldiers to a piece of open ground next to a village called Wanat to begin construction of a combat outpost. They were attacked 4 days after they moved in, before they'd had an opportunity to basically build the kind of defenses that are in place for most of the forward operating or combat outposts in Afghanistan. And the fight, which lasted for hours, resulted in 9 American deaths and 27 injuries.
That's horrible, of course, but I think there have been days with more U.S. casualties and battles with more U.S. casualties, or maybe just running into IEDs with more U.S. casualties. Why do you characterize this as perhaps the Army's worst day in the Afghanistan war?
Well, up until that point, and this happened in 2008, it was the largest loss of life. Since then, there was the shoot down of the Chinook, which had tragically 27
right.
SEALs on it, and there may have been bomb attacks since then that have resulted in more deaths. But up until that point, this was the worst single day that the Army had experienced, and it had implications for all of the forward operating bases and combat outposts scattered around Afghanistan.
What implications?
Well, just how vulnerable they were. It took 55 minutes for air support to arrive at Wanat. So the soldiers who were there were really on their own. And so, you know, the implications being how vulnerable are these distant outposts if the enemy, as they did in the case of Wanat, was capable of massing hundreds of enemy soldiers to attack.
Your article focuses on the story of First Lieutenant Jonathan Brostrom, or Brostrom. Who was he?
He was the platoon leader, and he was in charge, basically, for the first 3 days after the platoon arrived at Wanat. On the fourth day, or actually midway through the third day, his superior officer, Matt Meyer, who is a captain, arrived. When the attack occurred early the following morning, Lieutenant Brostrom was one of the 9 soldiers killed.
And in the second half of the story, you focus on David Brostrom, Jonathan's father, who has made it his mission to hold the military accountable for what happened to his son. Is that because he thought there was some kind of wrongdoing and it wasn't just, you know, the luck of the draw on the front lines?
That's right. He came to believe that the chain of command for the 173rd Airborne Brigade was responsible for moving his son's platoon to a position that was indefensible and not providing him with the level of backup and support that you would expect for a squad of American soldiers in such a remote location. So he went on a very sophisticated campaign, both within the Army, in the media, in Congress, to bring out what he felt were the failings of the chain of command, and succeeded in basically toppling the entire chain of command from the general who commanded the 173rd to Captain Matt Meyer, who had actually been decorated with a Silver Star for bravery for his actions during the conflict itself.
Gosh, this is like suing the military for malpractice.
Exactly, and the third part of the story tells the story of the Colonel Bill Ostland, who was one of those who was reprimanded and effectively his career would have been destroyed, who successfully fought back and essentially overturned all of the findings of two previous investigations and got himself and Captain Meyer reinstated with full and basically just completely revoked the reprimands.
He received a formal letter of reprimand stating that his actions, quote, raised legitimate questions about his judgment, professionalism, leadership, and tactical competence, unquote, according to your article. And then that letter of reprimand was withdrawn. It was revoked. So how does that happen? Is that just politics? Is that actual haziness about the facts of an incident like the Battle of Wenat? What were you able to learn?
I think it really resulted from Ostland's effort to get General Campbell, who's the general responsible for issuing the reprimand, to weigh the circumstances at Wenat in the full context of Colonel Ostland's responsibilities and Matt Meyer's responsibilities. I think that the effort by Dave Brostrom, which focused very narrowly on exactly what happened at this unfinished combat outpost and pointed up all of the inadequacies, didn't really concern itself with all of the other things that Colonel Ostland was responsible for. And ultimately, what Ostland demonstrated was that his brigade was so overstretched that he was essentially borrowing things like mortars and weapons systems from one outpost in order to loan them to others, in order to sort of stretch his brigade out over the entire territory that was involved. And he had, even on the day of this attack, other attacks on combat outposts to consider. So ultimately, General Campbell weighed the broader picture and decided that, in fact, the earlier reprimand was unjustified.
So is that your moral of the story, that the Pentagon was trying to do Afghanistan on the cheap?
I think so. I think that, you know, I ask at the end of the story, and I don't really attempt often in stories like these to issue a sort of a final judgment on things, because I don't really think that's my role. But I do feel that what happened at Wenat demonstrates what happens when we stretch our forces too thinly. In 2008, we were still very much focused on the surge of troops in Iraq. The attention of the United States military and the American public and our leadership was focused on Iraq, and yet we still had soldiers scattered around the mountains in Afghanistan attempting to hold off attacks by the Taliban, fairly regular attacks. And I think that before we fault the commanders on the ground in situations like that, we ought to take a step back and look at what kind of responsibilities we're placing on their shoulders. And instead of judging them, you know, judge to some extent our policies.
Was that scattering around the mountains of Afghanistan, as you put it, part of the issue here? Because you do say in the article that during the Battle of Wenat, the closest air support would have taken about an hour to reach the battalion, while reinforcements from the ground would take 45 minutes. Did commanding officers show a lack of judgment in positioning the base in such a remote area?
No. In fact, you know, what they were doing in creating that base was pulling back their forces, because the other two combat outposts were even more remote than this one. So they had made the judgment that we're too spread out. We need to bring our forces for their own safety and consolidate them in closer to the base. So, you know, I think this was an effort on their part to adjust to the increasingly difficult realities of the province that they were where they were fighting.
Mark Bowden, my guest on WNYC, best known for Black Hawk Down, now writing an article in the New Vanity Fair about the Battle of Wenat and what went wrong in one of the worst days for the U.S. Army in the Afghanistan war. We can take phone calls for him. If maybe you're a vet from Afghanistan who knows something about the Battle of Wanad or the strategy or the underfunding or the politics behind this kind of quest for a reprimand by the father of a soldier who got killed, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Mark also has a new book called Worm, The First Digital World War. And so, Mark, let me ask you about that. Why use the term world war?
Well, because the Conficker worm, which is what I write about in the book, infected millions of computers all over the world. And the effort, which was only partially successful, to stop it involved recruiting the cooperation of every top-level country domain in the world, all 110 of them. So it was truly, you know, I think, an extraordinary global threat and a global response that the book details.
This is about hackers working for foreign governments, infiltrating U.S. government databases and American bank databases, telecommunication networks, things like that?
Actually, yes, all of that. It was about the creation of one of the largest botnets in the world. And what a botnet is an illicit network of personal computers that have been tied together to become effectively a supercomputer under the control of a remote operator. And platforms like botnets can be used for all of the things that you mentioned, spying and sabotage, and a botnet the size of Conficker could actually crash the Internet itself.
People may think of this as a hypothetical threat, something kind of abstract out there in cyberspace. Have there been any big incidents yet? Is there a Wanad of cyberspace?
Well, they haven't used the Conficker botnet to attack the Internet, although the potential is there, and I personally find it fairly alarming that someone in the Ukraine sitting in front of a keyboard could wipe out the Internet if they chose to. So far, it has been used primarily for criminal activity. It drained about $72 million from American bank accounts earlier this year in a scam that we know about because the perpetrators were caught. But the nature of a botnet like Conficker is such that we aren't even necessarily aware of all the things that it's doing. People actually go online and lease portions of this botnet and use it for whatever they want.
And by the way, the word in the title, worm, you know, some people know it if they're techies, but it's different from a virus, which is spread by people inadvertently clicking on links, right?
Right. A worm is kind of state of the art. It really invades your computer and then links yours to other computers without your knowledge, without you doing anything to make it happen, and as I said, without you even being aware of the fact that you are linked. It's estimated that somewhere on the order of 1/4 of the computers in the world are linked to one botnet or the other.
Mark Bowden, his new book, Worm, The First Digital World War, his new article in Vanity Fair about the Battle of Wanad, one of the worst days for the Army, with 9 lost and many wounded in the Afghanistan war in July of 2008, and the quest of one dead soldier's father to get the chain of command held responsible for making mistakes there. And let's take a phone call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Jim in Morristown, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Well, the relatives, it's true that 36 casualties was probably the largest, as he says, the largest casualties per day in the Afghanistan war to that point, exceeded only by the helicopter crash. But when you consider it relative to the size of a unit, he said platoon, but a lot of people aren't familiar with what a platoon, you know, what you mean by squad, platoon, battalion, etc. A platoon is an infantry unit usually of about 50 troops. So there you had 36 casualties in a platoon of 50. That's the usual strength of a platoon. I don't know what the local situation was, because all situations are according to regulations, you know, but that's about the usual size of a platoon.
So if that's true, Mark, I mean, 36 out of a platoon of 50, that would be an unbelievable disaster and tragedy.
Well, it's true. Jim is right. I think there were 49 American soldiers, and there were a complement of Afghan National Army soldiers there during this fight. But the results are, you know, clearly catastrophic. It ended the efforts to build this combat outpost at Wanat. They eventually pulled everyone out of there. But the attack on this outpost resulted from a really unlikely concentration of Taliban forces. I mean, in any conflict, you have to give the enemy credit. In this case, they had prepared for what they had every reason to believe were the likely threats that they faced. And in this case, the fact that their enemy was able to mass sufficient men and arms to sustain an intensive assault like this was really a surprise. So the enemy, gained the initiative there, and the results were tragic.
Martin in Queens, you're on WNYC with Mark Bowden. Hi.
Yes, I was basically just curious about how you researched this in terms of how were you able to, were the military records who were you able to get access to or anything like that?
Yes, Wanat is probably the most studied episode in the history of Afghanistan, this recent Afghanistan war, in that there have been three really major investigations into what happened. So I had all three of those investigations to draw upon, and I did my own reporting, tracking down some of the men in the platoon who fought during that fight, key players in that fight, and then, of course, interviewing and tracing the efforts made by Lieutenant Brostrom's father. And then also I drew upon, extensive interviews with Colonel Osland and all the records that he had amassed to defend himself from the reprimands.
How unusual is it to do what David Brostrom, the father, did, to kind of make it his mission to hold the military accountable for what happened to his son, to get, people up the chain of command on our side, officially reprimanded or removed from their post, as happened here?
I think it's extraordinarily unusual. I don't think it's at all untypical that families of soldiers who were killed in combat actions come to question the judgment of their soldiers' commanders and the situation that resulted in their loved one's death.
And stuff happens, like the cover-up of the way Pat Tillman got killed by friendly fire, for example.
Without a doubt. But it takes someone, in this case, like Dave Brostrom, who is a retired Army colonel with many friends and contacts within the Army, with a great deal of knowledge about the bureaucracy of the military, and also with the savvy to approach NBC News and get a Dateline program put together, going to, recruiting people like Senator James Webb in Virginia to demand that the Army investigate what happened. He was able, because of his background, just because of, I think, of his own talents, to marshal an extraordinary campaign in order to, hold the officers he felt who had misjudged the situation to account.
Even though you come to the conclusion that he was wrong.
I think, in fact, he was. I don't know that he was wholly wrong. I certainly think that his effort illustrated how, in some instances like this one at Wanat, American soldiers were being placed in extremely dangerous positions without adequate support. I think that much is true. I think holding the chain of command in this case responsible, in my opinion, was excessive. I think these officers were doing remarkably well with very limited resources.
I have to ask you, since you did come to prominence through writing Black Hawk Down about one of our military's worst days, at least in definitely the worst day in the Somalia intervention in the 1990s, does this worst day have anything in common with that worst day?
I think maybe in some broad philosophical sense, in that, clearly in Somalia, we underestimated the hazards of deploying a small American force into Mogadishu to apprehend Mohamed Farah Aidid. And I think there was a certain arrogance involved where, we felt, our leadership felt, that we could function with impunity in Mogadishu and when we're taught otherwise. I think in the case of Afghanistan, again, it illustrates a tendency to overreach. You know, our military is the best in the world, without a doubt, but there are limits to what it can accomplish. And I think in the case of Afghanistan, you know, we are stretching our forces so thin. We did, I think, in particular, in 2008 and 2009, that we are placing young American men and women in greater jeopardy than is wise.
Mark Bowden's Vanity Fair article just out about the Battle of Wunat. His new book, Worm, The First Digital World War. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, NPR's Elizabeth Shogren reports on an EPA crackdown on New York polluters. Stay with us.